Hello and welcome to our program, Archaeology, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Patty Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading an article from Archaeology Magazine here on OWL Radio. The article is called Resisting Rome, How a Celtic Tribe Fought to Defend Their Iberian Homeland Against the Emperor's Legions. Written by Jason Urbanus. Quote, in the West, almost all Spain has been subjugated, except that part which adjoins the cliffs where the Pyrenees end and is washed by the nearer waters of the ocean. Here two powerful nations, the Cantabrians and the Asturians, lived in freedom from the rule of Rome, end quote. 2nd century AD Roman historian Florus, Epitome of Roman History. By the final decades of the 1st century BC, Rome had grown from a small city-state on the Italian peninsula into a vast empire whose territories completely encompassed the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. Its possessions extended inland as well, as much of Western Europe had succumbed to the relentlessly advancing Roman armies. Yet one small region remained impervious to Roman rule. This was a narrow swath of mountainous terrain wedged between the northern Meseta and the Bay of Biscay, home to two Celtic tribes, the Cantabrians and the Asturians. Rome began its conquest of Iberia in 218 BC. But by the time Augustus became emperor nearly two centuries later, this geographical pocket alone remained unconquered. In matters of war, the Romans did not suffer failure lightly, and in 26 BC, they finally launched what would prove to be a decisive campaign to annex the territory. As part of a violent 10-year conflict, now called the Cantabrian Wars, Roman legions camped in front of the walls of a site known today as Monte Bernorio, situated along the southern border of the Cantabrians' territory. This indigenous stronghold was vital to the continued independence of this notoriously bellicose people, as it has safeguarded the roads and the mountain passes that led into their heartland. In the end, it would fall, and so, in turn, would the rest of free Iberia. 2,000 years later, archaeologists working at Monte Bernorio have come face to face with the devastation left in Rome's wake. When we began excavating, the first thing we found was a level of destruction, says archaeologist Jesus Torres Martinez, president of the Monte Bernorio Institute of Ancient Studies of the Cantabric. It was obvious to us that the city had been destroyed by Roman troops and that the event was extremely violent. Archaeologists had briefly worked at the site in the middle of the 20th century, but when Torres Martinez began his project, Monte Bernorio and its environment, in the early 2000s, it was the first major undertaking there in nearly half a century. He has been joined in recent years by project co-director Manuel Fernandez Goetz of the University of Edinburgh, and their team has learned that there's much more to the story of Monte Bernorio than just its cataclysmic end. Their recent work has provided novel insights into the critical role the sediment played during the Cantabrian Wars, how the final battle unfolded, and how Monte Bernorio's inhabitants made a brave, yet ultimately futile, last stand. The Iron Age settlement of Monte Bernorio sits atop a nearly 4,000-foot-high limestone plateau in the foothills of the Cantabrian Mountains. Established as early as the 9th or 8th century BC, the once small site expanded gradually throughout the first millennium BC as circular and rectangular huts were built on the 70-acre Acropolis. By the end of the 1st century BC, it had developed into a powerful oppidum, a type of large fortified settlement common in Iron Age Celtic Europe from Britain to Hungary. These forts were typically built in strategic locations such as hilltops and often controlled important trade and communication routes. Although ancient Roman writers frequently characterized northern Iberians, including the Cantabrians, who had fought both against the Romans and with them as mercenaries, as savage, uncivilized, and overwhelmingly belligerent in nature, excavations over the past two decades have provided a different perspective. Finely crafted metal tools and weapons, ceramic vessels, and bone and stone artifacts found at Monte Bonorio indicate that the Cantabrians were skilled artisans. The remains of kern stones, which were used to grind cereals, and the bones of domesticated animals, including pigs, sheep, and cattle, attest to the agrarian side of this Iron Age society. Glass beads and other imported items are evidence that they were also part of long-distance trade networks. A rare inscribed document known as a Tessera Hospitalis, written in the Iberian alphabet, demonstrates that not only were these pre-Roman Cantabrians literate, but confirms that they spoke a Celtic language. Contrary to Roman opinion at the time, these were not barbarians, but members of a sophisticated and complex society. It is difficult to estimate how many people made Monte Bonorio their permanent home at a given time, perhaps hundreds or even thousands. One of the defining characteristics of Iron Age oppida was their great size, yet even by these standards, Monte Bonorio is exceptional. To our knowledge, it is the second largest site of the first millennium BC on the entire Iberian Peninsula, says Fernandez Goetz. It's one of the most important oppida, not only in Spain, but in all of Europe. But according to Fernandez Goetz, the settlement could also have functioned as an assembly site drawing people from across the region. The oppidum probably had the role of a central place for the rural population of a much wider environment, he says. For example, it may have been used as a place of refuge during a war, or as a market or religious center. Monte Bonorio's importance as a refuge, especially in the context of the Cantabrian Wars, is just beginning to be understood, thanks to Torres Martinez and Fernandez Goetz's recent archaeological work. By uncovering and examining sections of the city's impressive fortification system, they have shown the tremendous attention and resources that Monte Bonorio's residents invested in its defensive infrastructure. The site's topography itself already provides a natural element of defense, as the 10 to 20 foot high cliffs that encircle the Acropolis make it strenuous to ascend, especially for gear laden soldiers. However, the Cantabrians proceeded to erect a 15-foot-high circuit wall atop these cliffs, making the summit even more daunting to access. And if these obstructions were themselves not sufficient to repel storming armies, before they even reached this wall, the assailants would have had to cross a 15-foot-wide, 6-foot-deep ditch, avoiding palisades of sharpened sticks, all while being pelted with arrows and small stone projectiles by Cantabrian warriors perched on the ramparts. These were just the defenses installed at the edges of and immediately outside the settlement. Aerial photographs and recent LIDAR surveys have revealed that the plains below Monte Bonorio featured a massive series of concentric circular earthen ramparts, each measuring as much as 6 feet high and 6 feet wide. Covering around 220 acres, These ramparts protected the approaches to the city on all sides, creating an obstacle course that made an assault in organized ranks nearly impossible. The Cantabrians knew the Romans well, says Torres Martinez. They knew what was needed in order to establish maximum resistance against a conquering army, such as the Roman army, with all its might and its means of assault. The effort, resources, and workforce required to construct such a large and complex defensive network would have exceeded Monte Bonorio's own capabilities, suggesting that it was likely a collective effort between the oppidum's residents and people living in the surrounding countryside, and perhaps even Cantabrians from the greater region. Monte Bonorio's geographic position was extremely valuable from a strategic point of view, says Torres Martinez. The Cantabrians were well aware of how important it was to keep this fortified city in their possession. But like so many other communities sheltering in hill forts, the inhabitants of Monte Bonorio must have wondered whether their seemingly impregnable fortifications would be enough when the forces of Rome arrived, which they were certain to do. The Cantabrian Wars, which consisted of a series of military campaigns waged between 29 and 19 BC, are among the least well-known of Rome's many wars. The Romans had first arrived in Iberia in the 3rd century BC, during the course of the Second Punic War, and had been there ever since. Over nearly two centuries, they continually expanded their territory as they fought and defeated various Iberian tribes. Eventually, the entire peninsula, but for the extreme north, came under Roman rule, an oversight that Augustus was determined to fix. There were numerous military, political, and financial motives behind Rome's feeling compelled to and justified in taking possession of this last independent land. The Cantabrians and the Asturians were raiding their Iberian neighbors, who were already allied with the Romans, creating tensions back home. Rome eagerly sought to establish harbors along the Cantabrian coast, from which it could launch future campaigns into northern Europe. And the Romans coveted the region's enormous mineral resources, especially its huge gold deposits. The Cantabrian Wars were also a deeply personal mission for Augustus. For the newly crowned emperor, there was something even more desirable than territorial conquest: personal military glory. In the beginning of his reign, Augustus found himself fighting in the shadow of highly experienced and prestigious warriors who are much more charismatic than he was, Torres Martinez says. He desperately needed to project himself as a victorious military chief, and this war of conquest was the war he needed. Frustrated by the Roman army's slow progress, subjugating the rebellious tribes, Augustus traveled to the peninsula to personally take charge of the campaign in 26 BC. He had never led a Roman army in battle against a foreign enemy, and his on-the-ground participation in the Cantabrian Wars would be the only time he would ever take the field after his assumption of the title Imperator. Torres Martinez believes Augustus' actions are a clear indication that the young emperor believed victory in Iberia would help solidify his acceptance as Rome's supreme and sole leader and strengthen his grip on the Roman state. Augustus' presence in the Iberian Peninsula tells us how important the Cantabrian Wars were for the success of his great imperial project, says Torres Martinez. Upon his arrival, Augustus assembled 8 legions, around 50,000 men, at the town of Sigismana, near the modern-day city of Burgos. The few surviving ancient accounts that mention the war say that Augustus organized his troops into 3 divisions, a strategy intended to divide and conquer, and marched out with a plan to encircle the enemy's territory. As one column of Romans marched northward, seeking a pass through the Cantabrian mountains, their advance was blocked by Monte Bonorio. It was impossible for the Romans to cross the mountains through the most viable point without conquering Bonorio, says Torres Martinez. Thus began one of the most crucial engagements of the Cantabrian Wars. Until recently, there has been little archaeological evidence of the conflict, and its events have largely been overlooked by modern historians and archaeologists. This is partly due to the fact that much of the action took place in remote mountainous terrain. In the last two decades, though, there has been a conscious effort to locate and study sites associated with the hostilities, leading to the identification of numerous battlefields, Roman camps, and more. This has brought about a new understanding of this once disregarded war and helped demonstrate the scale of the military operations undertaken. Perhaps no site has provided a greater contribution to the study of the Cantabrian Wars than Monte Bonorio. Excavations and surveys within the city and throughout the surrounding countryside have uncovered a wealth of material that provides details about a previously unknown battle fought there between its Iron Age inhabitants and Roman invaders. Archaeologists now know that this clash was one of the most significant battles of the Cantabrian Wars, and scholars can rely on the artifacts found there, on topographical analysis, and on knowledge of both sides' military tactics to piece together how the fateful events of this encounter unfolded. The archaeology of the battle actually begins 2 miles south of Monte Bonorio at a site called El Castillejo. Two decades ago, archaeologists identified the remains of the Roman camp where the legions established a base prior to their assault Monte Bonorio at this site. Roman soldiers had left behind abundant evidence of their presence, including parts of weapons, military tools, legionary attire, and coins. Using the results of surveys and excavations, scholars were also able to reconstruct the short-lived camp's layout. It had been designed in typical Roman fashion, with a central rectangular encampment surrounded by earthen and stone walls and protected by a ditch and palisade. Although the discovery of a provincial Roman military camp is not that unusual, what struck the archaeologists was this camp's extraordinary size, covering almost 100 acres. This Roman camp is among the biggest ones so far discovered in Europe, says Torres Martinez, a reflection of just how committed the Romans were to triumphing this time around. When the Roman soldiers finally marched out of their camp at El Castillejo, the Cantabrians looked out from the heights of Monte Bonorio would have had a clear view of the invading army for the first time. Warriors and townspeople alike must have been terrified by the seemingly endless column of soldiers, totaling as many as two legions, along with auxiliary troops. This display of force was unknown in other Roman campaigns in the region, says Torres Martinez. Roman tactics were simple, swift, deliberate action to overwhelm their inferior foes, an effective blitzkrieg. Although they could not match the Romans' numbers, the Cantabrians of Monte Bonorio also could not afford to barricade themselves within their walls, as a prolonged Roman siege was certain to exhaust their limited resources. Meeting the Romans on an open field was, however, not to their advantage either, as the Cantabrians customarily fought with guerrilla-style tactics, unleashing quick surprise attacks on their enemy before retreating to the relative safety of their hill forts. Confronted with this apparently no-win situation, the Cantabrians chose to engage the Romans on their terms. Torres Martinez and Fernandez Goetz believe the two forces clashed for the first time in an area between the Roman camp and Monte Bonorio, just a few hundred yards south of its walls. Although the field was heavily looted in the past by illegal metal detecting, recent survey work has recovered military paraphernalia associated with both sides, including arrowheads and fragments of armor that likely represent the battle's initial encounter. Torres Martinez imagines that the Cantabrians held their own that day against the Roman invaders. The Cantabrian warriors fought well, he says. The battle had an uncertain outcome until they finally retreated inside the city walls. Scholars can only speculate as to what the leaders of the Cantabrians thought after this contest or how exactly they came to their next decision, as there is no known written record. But it appears that in an act of self-sacrifice, after coming to terms with their impending fate, they changed strategies to give their countrymen the time they needed to assemble additional resources or to flee somewhere safe. The warriors of Monte Bonorio resolved to keep the Romans occupied for as long as possible. Prolonging the fight at Monte Bonorio meant obtaining vital time for the Cantabrian people and their troops on the other side of the mountains, Torres Martinez says. They had to resist for the sake of their people. The Romans also knew that time was of the essence. If they spent too long at Monte Bonorio, winter weather would make the mountain passes uncrossable, leaving their troops stranded on the south side of the range until spring. After taking time to regroup in their camp, they once again marched out of El Castillejo and launched an all-out assault. Given the obstacles and impediments surrounding the city, their progress would have been slow and hard-earned. It surely cost them a lot to get through that large defensive field, running across embankments and moats and charging up the hill, says Torres Martinez. This time, though, the unflinching Romans successfully reached the walls of Monte Bonorio. In recent years, the team led by Torres Martinez and Fernandez Goetz has uncovered a huge concentration of artifacts both inside and outside the city's southern gate that establishes it as the location where the Romans focused their attack. They unearthed Roman buckles, hobnails, spearheads, and even rare legionary rings worn as a mark of soldiers' Roman citizenship, as well as Cantabrian objects, including personal adornments such as a belt and weapons such as axes, knife blades, and javelins. Evidence of the ruthless Roman artillery barrage, which launched salvo after salvo at the Cantabrian fortifications in order to provide cover for the first wave of Romans bearing wall-scaling ladders, has been found scattered across the entire area. For example, the team located several Roman arrowheads bent from the impact they had sustained. Many others were discovered still embedded in the walls 2,000 years after they had been fired. Evidence also shows that, in addition to ranks of archers, the Romans used hand-cranked machines, such as cerobalistra and scorpii, to fire large-caliber arrows and stone projectiles. The excavations have revealed how the Cantabrians countered the Roman surge by firing their own arrows, whose shape distinguishes them from the Roman ones, by launching javelins, and even by throwing river stones down upon their attackers. Pieces of both Roman and native armor and weaponry, broken and dislodged by impact, suggest that the hand-to-hand combat outside the southern gate was intense. Eventually, the Romans' superior numbers, experience, and technology prevailed. They breached the gate, tore down a section of Monte Bonorio's Great Wall, and rushed onto the Acropolis, where archaeological work has shown that the fighting continued into the streets and among the buildings. In the end, the Roman war machine was simply overwhelming. The layer of ash and burned material that blankets the site today is a testament to Rome's total destruction of the oppidum and a reminder of the brutal realities of Roman victory. Many of Monte Benorio's inhabitants were presumably slaughtered as they fought to the end. Surrender was not an option for the Cantabrians, says Torres Martinez. It was an unbearable shame in a warrior culture like theirs. There's no mention of a battle of Monte Benorio in the writings of ancient Rome that tells the story of the oppidum's people or of its demise. Some scholars believe the town of Burgodum, about which the 2nd century AD Roman historian Florus writes in his Epitome of Roman History, may refer to Monte Benorio, but this is far from certain. Instead, it falls to archaeologists to try to provide a voice for the Cantabrians and to imagine what they may have experienced the day their stronghold fell and the world they knew collapsed. For those living nearby, the loss of Monte Benorio must have resounded like a death knell. People that witnessed these dramatic events must have been in shock when they saw a huge plume of smoke rising from Monte Benorio that could be seen from dozens of miles around, like that of a volcano, says Torres Martinez. They must have contemplated that terrible vision with heavy hearts. It meant that the Cantabrian people were doomed. With the fortress of Monte Benorio eliminated, the Romans swept through the rest of Cantabria and soon after Asturias, crushing one town at a time until the only remaining free peoples of Iberia had, at last, been brought under the Roman yoke. You have been listening to Archaeology on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Patty Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio.